Ibogaine, the neuroscience from OTW Journal. A single dose of a root bark alkaloid from the forests of Gabon can switch off heroin withdrawal overnight and, in the wrong body, stop the heart. Ibogaine is the most paradoxical compound in this journal. A dirty drug that hits a dozen neural targets at once, does its lasting work through a long-lived metabolite, rewires the brain's reward circuitry through a growth factor called GDNF, and carries a documented body count. This is the neuroscience of ibogaine, the promise, the mechanism, and the peril. This article is education, not medical advice. A root, a religion, and an accidental cure. Ibogaine is the principal alkaloid of Tabernanthe iboga, a modest forest shrub in the dogbane family that grows in the equatorial forests of West Central Africa, chiefly Gabon. Its psychoactive compounds concentrate in the root bark, which carries more than a dozen iboga alkaloids. Ibogaine is the most abundant. For generations, the plant has been the sacrament of Bwiti, a spiritual discipline practiced by the Mitsogo, Babongo, Punu, and Fang peoples, and now one of Gabon's officially recognized religions. Its central rite is initiation, in which a novice consumes large doses of root bark for the first time. A multi-day ordeal that opens with violent vomiting and motor incoordination before resolving into a long, oniric dream state. The compound itself was first isolated in 1901. For most of the 20th century, ibogaine's only Western career was as a tonic. From the 1930s into the 1960s, it was sold in France as Lambaren and marketed as a stimulant and neuromuscular tonic for fatigue, depression, and convalescence. Lambaren was withdrawn in 1966, and the United States placed ibogaine in Schedule 1 when the Controlled Substances Act took effect in 1970. The discovery that turned ibogaine from a curiosity into a candidate medicine was an accident. In 1962, Howard Lotsoff, then a 19-year-old heroin user in New York, took ibogaine expecting a recreational psychedelic. When the long visionary state finally subsided, he noticed something he had not anticipated. His opioid withdrawal and cravings had vanished. He gave the alkaloid to 6 addicted friends, and 5 reported the same effect. Lotsoff spent the following decades pursuing this observation, ultimately securing a series of U.S. patents for using ibogaine to interrupt chemical dependence. One molecule, many locks. What makes ibogaine pharmacologically strange is that it has no single mechanism. It is a textbook dirty drug, binding a wide array of targets at low micromolar affinities, with no receptor obviously dominant, which is precisely why its mechanism of action remains contested 3 decades into serious study. The best characterized targets span several neurotransmitter families. Ibogaine is a competitive inhibitor of the NMDA receptor channel, a glutamatergic action it shares in spirit with ketamine. It binds the kappa opioid receptor and behaves as an agonist there, while its relationship to the mu opioid receptor is genuinely contested. It is a moderate sigma-2 ligand and a weak inhibitor of the serotonin and dopamine transporters. Notably, it is not a classic 5-HT2A agonist. It is not a psychedelic in the way LSD or psilocybin are. Among all these, one target has drawn special attention. Ibogaine is a potent, open-channel blocker of the alpha-3 beta-4 nicotinic acetylcholine receptor, among its highest potency actions. Stanley Glick and Isabel Maisonneuve built an entire drug discovery program on the hypothesis that this antagonism underlies the alkaloid's broad anti-addictive reach, yielding the synthetic, less cardiotoxic analog, 18-methoxycoronaridine. Whether any one of these mechanisms is the engine of ibogaine's effects, or whether the effect emerges only from their convergence, is still an open question. The metabolite that does the work. Ibogaine itself is short-lived. In humans, it is cleared within hours. The liver enzyme CYP2D6 strips a methyl group from ibogaine to produce noribogaine, and it is this metabolite, not the parent compound, that lingers. Noribogaine's plasma half-life runs to roughly a day or two, so for days after a single dose, it is noribogaine that dominates exposure. This pharmacokinetic split is the likely reason a single session can suppress withdrawal and craving for an extended window. The metabolite is not merely a longer-lived copy of its parent. Its receptor profile is shifted. Noribogaine is a substantially more potent serotonin reuptake inhibitor than ibogaine, and it engages the opioid system differently. Because CYP2D6 activity varies widely across individuals, so does the conversion of ibogaine to noribogaine, which is one reason a standard dose can behave very differently from one person to the next. Switching off, withdrawal, and craving. The clinical observation that started everything, that a single dose blunts opioid withdrawal and craving, has held up across the small, uncontrolled human series that exist. The mechanism is usually attributed to noribogaine's multi-target action, with its opioid system and serotonergic effects suppressing the withdrawal cascade while its long half-life sustains the relief, but the precise circuitry remains incompletely characterized and should not be overstated. The strongest human numbers come from observational clinics. In a 2018 study of 30 people with opioid dependence treated at a private clinic in Mexico, subjective opioid withdrawal scores fell by roughly half within about 3 days of treatment, and self-reported abstinence persisted in a meaningful minority out to a year. A parallel 12-month study of 14 patients in New Zealand likewise found a significant acute drop in withdrawal scores and durable reductions in drug use and depression. These are encouraging signals, but the evidence ceiling is low and must be stated plainly. Every one of these studies is observational, open-label, uncontrolled, and small, with no placebo arm. There are no completed randomized controlled efficacy trials of ibogaine for opioid use disorder. The outcomes cannot establish efficacy. And the New Zealand cohort carried a stark reminder of the stakes. One of its 14 enrolled patients died during treatment, a drug that rewires reward. The most rigorous mechanistic neuroscience on ibogaine concerns not its acute effects, but a slower structural one: the induction of a neurotrophic factor in the brain's reward hub. In a landmark study from Dorit Ron's laboratory, systemic ibogaine reduced ethanol intake and self-administration in rats, including in a relapse model, without touching sucrose preference, marking the effect as relatively specific to drug reward. The site and the molecule were both pinned down. Microinjecting ibogaine directly into the ventral tegmental area reduced ethanol self-administration, while the same injection into the neighboring substantia nigra did nothing. There, ibogaine upregulated glial cell, line-derived neurotrophic factor, or GDNF, triggering its downstream cascade. Crucially, the authors closed the causal loop. Injecting GDNF itself into the ventral tegmental area mimicked ibogaine's effect, and infusing GDNF-neutralizing antibodies blocked it. This places ibogaine within a now prominent theme in psychedelic neuroscience that durable behavioral change may be driven by neurotrophic, plasticity-promoting signaling rather than by the acute subjective experience. The heart is the hard limit. No honest account of ibogaine can soften its central liability. It can kill by stopping the heart's electrical rhythm. Both ibogaine and noribogaine block the Hurg potassium channel that carries the rapid, repolarizing current responsible for resetting the cardiac action potential. Blocking it slows ventricular repolarization, prolongs the QT interval on the ECG, and can precipitate torsade de Pointes, a polymorphic ventricular tachycardia that may degenerate into fibrillation and sudden death. The potencies leave little margin. Because therapeutic anti-addiction doses produce plasma concentrations that overlap the blocking range, and because the longer-lived noribogaine keeps the pressure on for days, QT prolongation occurs at the doses actually used, including in people with no prior heart disease. The mortality record makes the abstraction concrete. A 2012 forensic review assembled all known ibogaine-associated deaths outside West Central Africa from 1990 through 2008. 19 fatalities, with no characteristic neurotoxic syndrome at autopsy. A pattern pointing toward cardiac, not central nervous system causes. In the cases with adequate data, death was typically explained or worsened by pre-existing cardiovascular disease, co-ingested opioids or sedatives, and the absence of proper cardiac and electrolyte screening. This drug is dangerous in the body of anyone whose heart, electrolytes, or other medications have not been carefully assessed, from the underground to the state house. Because ibogaine is Schedule Y in the United States and unapproved nearly everywhere, the people seeking it have largely gone abroad, to clinics in Mexico and Costa Rica that operate in a legal gray zone, frequently without binding medical oversight. This is the central harm reduction problem. Against this backdrop, the most rigorous recent human study took a deliberately cautious form. In 2024, a Stanford team led by Nolan Williams published an observational study of 30 male Special Operations Forces veterans with traumatic brain injury, where the alkaloid was co-administered with magnesium specifically to blunt its cardiac effect. The reported outcomes were striking. Average disability scores fell to effectively none at 1 month, with roughly 88% reductions in PTSD symptoms, 87% in depression, and 81% in anxiety, and no serious adverse events. The authors were careful about the limits. An all-male, self-selected cohort with no control group cannot establish efficacy, but it is among the cleanest signals in the literature. Policy has begun to move ahead of the evidence. In 2023, Kentucky's Opioid Settlement Commission floated devoting $42 million to Ibogaine research. The plan was later shelved. The torch passed to Texas, where Senate Bill 2308 committed $50 million in matching state funds toward FDA clinical trials of Ibogaine for opioid use disorder, PTSD, and depression, and was signed into law in June 2025. It is one of the largest public investments in psychedelic medicine to date, and a wager that a compound with a documented body count can be made safe enough to earn approval. This article is education, not medical advice.